Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're listening to Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. This week, Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling is presiding over sessions of the Virginia Senate, ready to cast tie-breaking votes in the chamber that has 20 Democrats and 20 Republicans. While working at the General Assembly, Bowling is also chairman of the Virginia presidential campaign effort of former GOP Governor Mitt Romney of Massachusetts as Virginia voters approach the state's March 6th Republican presidential primary. Joining us for a discussion of Virginia's legislature, its politics, and its work this winter and spring is Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling. Welcome.
Thanks, Bob. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you back on the program. I'm your host, Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorenson Institute for Political Leadership at the University of Virginia. Give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397 if you have a question for Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling. Governor, the Virginia General Assembly is more Republican this year than it was during the last year's session. The Senate is 20-20 now, and you're the tiebreaker on many votes. How is the Senate different this year, and how many ties have you broken so far?
Well, I think things are off to a pretty good start. When the Senate organized back on January the 11th, it was a little bit of a rocky road and a little stressful. You know, I've been at the Capitol three or four times now when we've gone from Republican to Democrat majorities, Democrat to Republican majorities, and vice versa. Anytime you have that type of a transition, there's a little tension, but I think we've worked through that. We've gotten down now into about the third week of the legislative session to doing the business of the people of Virginia, and things seem to be going a little bit more smoothly. So far, I've cast three tie-breaking votes, two associated with the organization of the Senate back on January the 11th, and then one, in fact, today that dealt with a project labor agreement bill that came through the Senate and resulted in a 2020 tie. As far as the differences are concerned, there is a different leadership structure in the Senate. We now have a Republican floor leader in the Senate. We have Republican committee chairs of all the committees in the Senate. We have Republican majorities on all the committees except one in the Senate. And I think that's resulted in a little bit of a different leadership style and approach, which I think is good for the Senate. I think it will be good for the Senate over time. But most things in the General Assembly, Bob, as you know, and you've been around there for a number of years and in different capacities, aren't partisan things. And particularly in the Senate, it's a very collegial body. And even though we have a different leadership structure, I think that collegiality will continue. And most of the issues that we deal with, frankly, Republicans and Democrats aren't the major consideration.
Governor, I've heard from a reliable source that the campaigns of Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum are planning to try to get their Virginia supporters to cast a ballot for Ron Paul on the March 6th Republican primary day, when only Ron Paul and, of course, Mitt Romney are on the Virginia Republican presidential ballot. Have you heard that, and what do you think of such a tactic?
Well, I haven't heard it, but it wouldn't surprise me. And, you know, neither Speaker Gingrich or former Senator Santorum made the Virginia ballot. So the only way that they have to keep Governor Romney from walking away with all of Virginia's convention delegates would be to somehow try and get their supporters to go out and support Congressman Paul in the hope that he could somehow win the Virginia primary and capture those delegates. So to a certain extent, they're playing defense as opposed to offense. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them do that. Probably if I were in their shoes, I'd try to do the same thing. But we're going to be doing our best to get Governor Romney's message out in Virginia. I'm hoping that he'll have a strong win today in Florida. I think he's going to have a good month of February and a number of the caucuses and primaries that are coming up in February. So by the time our primary comes around in early March, he should have a good head of steam behind him, and hopefully we'll be able to fend off Congressman Paul and any efforts that Speaker Gingrich and former Senator Santorum might make here in Virginia.
What do you think of the efforts of the super PACs that are such major players now in Florida and in other state primaries that are spending humongous amounts of money, mostly on negative ads, attacking the other candidate?
Yeah, I think the whole process has frankly deteriorated a great deal and become a little bit disgusting, and a lot of that has been driven by these super PACs. A lot of this arose out of, frankly, the federal campaign finance reform laws of a few years ago, you know, when you had a lot of these caps imposed on the amount of money that people could contribute to federal campaigns. It just drove the money underground, and it drove it into these super PACs. It's one of the problems, I think, that exist with the federal campaign financing structure. I think we do it better, frankly, here in Virginia. We have no limits on what anybody can give to a political campaign, individuals, corporations, political action committees, but everything is disclosed. So everybody knows who's given money to whom. And if candidates are going to run ads criticizing an opponent or attacking an opponent, you know where those ads are coming from. And, you know, voters can respond to that accordingly. So I think that's a far better system than what we see right now at the federal level. And I think the direction that we've seen these super PACs go in, and I suspect will continue to see them go in between now and November, is not a positive thing for the quality of the political debate in our country.
Is there anything to stop a super PAC from setting up shop and trying to affect next year's governor's race in Virginia?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. That's a good question. I guess one could set up any type of committees that they might want to set up, as long as they do it under the law. You know, they file those committees, they report their contributions. I would certainly hope that we would not go down that road in Virginia. You know, I think the tone of politics is entirely too negative. You know, I think that's true on both sides of the political aisle, and frankly, it's true among all the candidates. These campaigns tend to be too negative. They tend to be too personal. You know, I'd like to see us get back to a more civil debate where we actually focus on a candidate's background, knowledge, and experience, their stand on the important issues facing the country or facing the state, and their vision for the future. And, you know, you lift up why you should be elected as opposed to why somebody else should not be elected. That may be Pollyannish in the world in which we live today, but I still think that would be a better way to handle our elections.
Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling is my guest on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call at 866-611-6397. That's 866-611-NEWS. If you have a question for the Lieutenant Governor. Governor, what do you see happening this session with Virginia's 30-year ban on uranium mining that's discussed but not likely to be changed this year, but still things are happening there?
Yeah, I think it's unlikely that we're going to see any significant changes. There was a study initiated a year or so ago by the National Academy of Sciences to try to help answer some of the questions about whether or not uranium mining could be done safely in Virginia. Frankly, I think that study created more questions than it answered. I don't think it turned out to be particularly helpful, frankly, in trying to analyze the issue. There clearly are economic benefits that could be derived from uranium mining, but I think there are still big questions about whether or not it can be done safely. And until those questions are answered, I don't think it's likely that we're going to see any significant changes in the current status of the law.
Do you think that there will be regulatory structures set up in case the ban is lifted next year?
There could be. The governor has indicated that he wants to move forward with some further study and analysis. I think that's a good interim step. My hope, though, is that that study and analysis would really zero in on the central question. And the central question really isn't, is there economic benefit to be derived from uranium? We all know the answer to that. The central question isn't, if we move forward with uranium mining, what type of a regulatory structure should be in place? The central question in my mind still remains, is this something that can be done safely in Virginia? I don't think we're any closer to answering that question today than we were a year ago. And whatever step we take next, I hope that will be the central focus, because until we answer that question, I think we have to be very cautious about making changes.
Looking at politics for a moment, you have made no secret of your desire to run for governor of Virginia next year. The Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli of your same Republican Party of Virginia has made no secret of his desire to run for governor next year. So the two of you have, I guess, a primary, although I guess that hasn't been settled yet. coming up in the springtime, about a year and a few months away. Terry McAuliffe has made no secret of his desire to run as a Democrat for governor. What do you think of the competition?
Well, I think I'm better than the competition. Look, I know all these guys. They're all friends of mine. I think they all have their relative strengths and weaknesses as candidates. I tend to focus just on myself. I learned a long time ago in this business, you can't control what anybody else does. You can only control what you do. So you're right. I've made no secret about my intentions of running for governor. I think it's the best way for us to continue the progress that Governor McDonnell and I have made over the course of the past couple of years. And what I'm going to be focused on over the course of the next year and a half or so in getting my message out is the fact that I think I'm the most qualified candidate to be the next governor of our state. I've served 20 years in public office, 4 years as a member and chairman of the Board of Supervisors in Hanover County, 10 years in the state Senate, what will be 8 years as lieutenant governor, the last four of which as a member of the governor's cabinet, heading up our state's economic development and job creation efforts. I think that gives me a unique qualification to continue the work that Governor McDonnell and I have done. I think in addition to that, I'm going to talk a lot about my leadership style and effectiveness. I think government has to be about more than, you know, rigid ideologies and partisan politics and confrontation and division. I think government has to be about finding solutions to the challenges that face our state. And that's what the governor and I have tried to focus on. We've tried to take our conservative values and relate them to issues that families and businesses care about, try to get things done. I've got a record of doing that in state government. I'd like to continue doing that in the future. And then because of what I believe is my qualification and my leadership style and effectiveness and ability to get things done, I think I'm the most electable Republican candidate. Because one of the things, Bob, I try to tell my fellow Republicans that we as a party need to realize is that there aren't enough Republicans in Virginia to elect anybody to anything. There aren't enough Democrats in Virginia to elect anybody to anything. These elections in Virginia and lots of other swing states across our country are decided by independent voters, and you have to be able to energize and mobilize the base of your party, which I think I can do, but you also have to be able to reach out to those independent voters, and they don't care about politics. They don't care about ideology. They just want leaders who are going to get things done to help them have an opportunity to improve the quality of their life. So that's going to be my message. If that's the kind of responsible, effective leadership folks are voting for, I think they'll be drawn to my candidacy. And if they want somebody that's just going to break the dishes, you know, they'll be drawn elsewhere.
Virginia Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling is my guest on Assembly Conversations this evening. Give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397 if you have a question for the Lieutenant Governor. If you listen closely to Republican presidential debates, and there have only been 18 of them so far, but they're bound to be more, one of the things you hear is that government should not be in the business of creating jobs. That government is not a job creator, but that private business is a job creator, and that government shouldn't be picking winners and losers. How do you respond to that argument when people say you're trying to create jobs and yet you're in the government of Virginia?
Well, there's no question but that the government can create jobs and does create jobs every day. I mean, when you hire teachers or you hire firefighters or police officers, those are examples of the government creating jobs. But in general, I think the role of government is to create an environment in which the private sector can foster and succeed. I think we've done that pretty effectively in Virginia. You try to do that by having favorable tax policies and regulatory policies, a favorable litigation environment, protecting our state's right to work law, making sure you have an educated workforce. But you also do that by aggressively marketing your state and promoting your state as a great place to do business. We've done that as well, both here at home and all around the world. We've opened up new economic development and trade offices in the last 2 years in Great Britain and China. In India, helping us tell the Virginia story abroad. And then there are occasions where on some of the larger deals, government incentives can help attract businesses to our state versus other states. And, you know, we've got a pretty good track record in Virginia of using incentives sparingly, but on some of the big deals that are out there today, you know, if you don't have those incentive programs in place, those deals are going to go someplace else. So those are ways that government can help create jobs, can help create an environment in which jobs are created. But ultimately, in Virginia today, about 86% of the new jobs that we've seen created in the last couple of years have been created in the private sector. And that's where we really want to see those jobs created and try to do everything that we can to encourage and enable the private sector to invest and to hire.
Let's go to the phones, where our first caller is Tim from Charlottesville. Tim, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling.
Yeah, thank you for putting me on. I really appreciate that. I just really, all I was calling to say was I just want to say thanks for what the Lieutenant Governor just said about appealing to independent voters and really just being a leader in government that's there to find solutions to issues. I myself am a leader in the military, and so it's nice to look at the politicians and the people who are, you know, my leaders in the upper government world, and know that they're just there to solve issues as well, and they're not about politicking and breaking dishes, as you put it. So it was just really nice to hear. So you've already got one vote from me, so thanks.
Well, I appreciate that, Tim. Look, I'm not naive enough to suggest that there aren't a lot of people in this business who are driven by ideology, and they are driven by politics, and goodness knows there's a lot of partisanship and a lot of dish breakers. So I don't want to suggest that it's always that way. That again would be rather Pollyannish. But you know, I've noticed in the 20 years I've been involved in government that frankly the partisanship has become more pronounced, the ideologies have become more rigid. I don't think that's produced better government. And if you think it has, you only have to look at Washington today, where nothing is getting done, in large part because everything is partisan and everything is about these rigid ideologies. And, you know, I remember a political science professor that I had in college at the University of Charleston by the name of Evelyn Harris, who once said this, and I never forgot it. I found it to be true. She said, "The best public policies emerge from the clash of contending views and ideas." And I think that's true. There are a lot of people in our society today who have lots of different views about lots of different things. And at the end of the day, government works best when it's able to take those conflicting views and ideas and fashion them in public policies that are able to create unity. You know, I believe we build a better Virginia through addition and multiplication, not through subtraction and division. And that's the way I've always tried to conduct myself in public life. That's worked well for me. So that's what I'm going to keep doing. And again, if that's the kind of leadership the people of Virginia are looking for, then they'll be attracted to my candidacy. And if they're looking for some other different kind of leadership, they'll be attracted to someone else's candidacy.
Tim, thanks for your call. Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling is my guest on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call, 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. If you have a question for the Lieutenant Governor, our next caller is Bob in Roanoke. Bob, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with Bill Bowling.
How are you doing? Nice to thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Bob.
Bill, I just hope that we can some way or another get the jobs back here from overseas, because the more you take jobs overseas, the more it destroys the economy of this country. And we need the biggest part of those jobs back over here. And we need to drill for our own oil. America needs to stand on its own two feet and not depend on anyone. So I sure do like what you're doing. I like what you say. I think the leadership you've shown here in the state of Virginia, that leadership is the main thing about it. And what's going on the national level as far as the way they're fighting and everything, like the Hatfields and McCoys, that's just turning people away from politics. And I would rather vote for Rich Santorum, because at least he's trying to do something. But thanks, Bill, for all the things you do, and I really appreciate it. And you make a good governor. There's no doubt about that.
Well, thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. You mentioned a couple of things, and let me just respond to them quickly. You certainly are right. Over the course of the past decade or so, we have seen a lot of jobs move overseas, particularly in the manufacturing sector. There are some strategies in place, both at the federal level and here in Virginia, that are trying to bring those jobs back to Virginia. We've had some success in that regard, and it's an area that we continue to work very hard on. Some of the areas of our state, Southern Virginia in particular, with the overseas movement of jobs in the furniture industry and the textile industry, hit very hard. So we believe there is an opportunity to bring those types of manufacturing jobs back to America and back to Virginia, and we're working very hard to do that. And your comments on energy, I certainly agree with. Our country today really does not have a holistic national energy policy. We desperately need one. And, I think it needs to be what I call an all-of-the-above approach. The governor and I have worked very hard to expand traditional forms of energy in Virginia, coal, natural gas, nuclear. We think there's a place for all of that. We also have worked hard to develop renewable sources of energy like wind and solar and biomass. We've implemented a number of, I think, responsible energy conservation measures in our state. We'd love to be able to develop our offshore energy resources off the coast of Virginia. So to have a workable national energy policy, it has to be an all-of-the-above approach. We're open to doing all that. We've established a modest goal of making Virginia the East Coast's energy leader, and we think we are uniquely positioned to do that. And, I think having a very aggressive national energy policy is good for the economy. It'll help create jobs and opportunity, but it's also good from the standpoint that it does lessen our dependence on, foreign sources of energy, a lot of which, by the way, comes from countries that don't particularly care much for us. So the more we can do to develop more autonomy in the energy field as a country is only going to benefit us in the long term, and we want Virginia to be right at the forefront of that effort.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for your call. Our next caller is William from Alta Vista. William, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me on. Yes, I'm a registered Democrat, but I'm really an independent. I'm not a member of the 1%, but I'd say I'm a member of the top 10%. I'm a Christian. I have private education, graduated with honors, but I work in the construction industry, and 75% of the people that I work with need a different system. So I advocate a third party, which some would call a socialist system, and I would bring back the WPA and the CCC and other such projects to assist the 75% of Virginia and the United States that are not being educated well enough and that that do not have skills required to get good jobs when they leave school, whether it's college or high school. How do you feel about a third party? Even if a third party cannot win, do you think there's room for that opinion?
Well, I think there's room in our system for lots of different opinions. The great thing about America is that everybody is entitled to their opinion, and they're entitled to express their opinion in any way that they choose to express their opinion. I think there are a lot of ways in which the major parties, the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, have done good things. There are a lot of areas in which they have, frankly, failed us. But I think, by and large, we're going to continue to be a two-party system. What I try to focus on within our party, the Republican Party, is to stand strong for a conservative approach to government. I believe in keeping government small and focused on its core responsibilities, and keeping taxes low and promoting individual rights and individual responsibility, and You know, the strength of the private sector and the entrepreneurial spirit of America, those are things that, you know, Republicans, generally speaking, are about. And I think the major parties and, you know, certainly have an opportunity to address issues and to solve problems. But, you know, I think what we have to do, and this starts with those of us who have the privilege of serving in public office, is we have to realize that the ultimate responsibility is getting things done. You know, it's solving problems. And, you know, we don't run elections just to win campaigns so we can hold some office, or at least we shouldn't. You know, we run elections and we win campaigns to earn the right to lead. And leadership is about getting things done. And I think the system today has become too much about partisanship, too much about ideology, too much about having everything done, you know, my way, quote unquote. And it needs to be more about working together to find solutions. And I think that, you know, we're capable of doing that. If we don't do that, people are going to continue to be frustrated and turned off with the process. But look, I mean, here's the good news. About 62% of the people of Virginia today think our state is on the right track. Now, they may not agree with everything that we're doing, but they feel pretty good about the way government is working in Virginia. So I think, you know, one of the things that Governor McDonnell and I have been able to show folks in the last couple of years is how government can work, how government should work. Now, Washington stands in a stark contrast to that. I've often said when I'm out on the hustings making speeches to groups, you know, if you want to see how government doesn't work, look north of the Potomac River at Washington, D.C. If you want to see how government can work, should work, look south of the Potomac River at Virginia. So if we just keep doing our thing well here in Virginia, hopefully that'll be contagious, and maybe we can share a different approach to government, not just with our fellow Virginians, but with people all across the country. And I'm still optimistic about our ability to do that, but it really is all about the quality of the elected leadership we have, and the course that our elected leaders set for the country, for our state, for our local communities, whatever the case may be.
Thank you, William. Thanks for your call and your question. Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling is my guest on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call, 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397 if you have a question for the Lieutenant Governor. Our next caller is Austin from Richmond. Austin, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling.
Good evening. My question is surrounding...
Austin, I'm hearing a little bit of music in the background, which means we're going to have to take a little break pretty soon. Why don't you hold on, and we'll come back after the break and have your question, and the Lieutenant Governor can respond at that time. You're listening to Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Assembly Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.